tell me, when you were doing that, like, I mean, it was good money, as you say.
Yeah.
What were you doing with that money? Did you have to hand that over to your parents?
I gave it to my mother, and she dressed me very well, actually. She was always buying, I got a very good winter coat, and but anyway, she gave up after a long time because I was always looking for stuff. And so I got a beautiful suit one time for Anne Tindall's wedding, long gone. And she married a man by the name of Mick Seary. And I got this suit, and my mother said, "That's the last thing you're getting now. From now on, you mind your money." And it was hard trying to keep going, but I just like clothes. And my sister Linda used to say, "She's upstairs, will I wear me blue or me black or me pink or me white? I'm getting out, but she's getting ready." My poor sister, which is a long, long time dead. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And was it...
She was in the laboratory with Anne.
Yeah.
She was lovely. Wasn't she fair?
And she married a Newcastle man.
She did, yeah.
Yeah. And I heard that Anne was telling me about that. And and so that laboratory work that was going on, it was amazing.
That was amazing.
And the so from Clondalkin down here, the river, you know, that flows by, you'd see the
from the ponds.
You'd see the colours, the different colours coming down.
That's right. Yeah. The strip book was definitely the best paper.
Yeah.
I think it was known all over Ireland.
Oh yes,
wasn't it?
Yeah, we had the best quality paper.
Because water started.
We had the first rights on
the water. So we had the best of it. Clondalkin would have been good, but
they were only able to make newsprint.
Yeah.
Because they had the end of the river, and the wood.
The flow of the river would go from here up to there.
To Clondalkin,
and so whatever pollution went into the river here would go up there.
Of course,
the Camac.
Yeah.
The Camac River, which still flows through.
And different colours would go up along.
That's right.
And we're very excited here in Saggart at the moment that the old part of the mill is being refurbished done up. And where Jean's uncle, Crocky Whelan, John Whelan was the man's name, where he worked in the boiler house, that has been rebuilt. And it's absolutely gorgeous. Now, it's not fitted out yet, but, you know, they put the roof on, they've done the stonework. And I was in the park one day, and these two lads were building away, you know, and Betty and I were walking, Betty here, and I said to the lad, "Make sure you make a good job of that now, lads." And he said, "Oh, we will." So we went on down the park, and there's two ponds, there's a weir. It's beautiful, and cycle track and all in it, and we were marvelling at
But that must make you feel great.
I'm so proud. But
just
to finish, when we were coming back up this way, the lad said to me, "Hello." And we went over to them, and he said, "What was this place?"
Mm.
So I said to him, "We worked here packing paper. And that was the place we packed it in. And this is where we got our heat from. This was the boiler house." I said, "That's not an Irish accent." "Oh no," he said, we're from Manchester. "Tell us more." So we stood talking to them, and he was infatuated with the whole thing.
And it must have been very proud for you that even in those days when you had a good job, because like you were getting paid well, and then when you were out and you were talking to your friends and were you boasting about the fact that you were working there? Were you proud that you were there?
We were proud to be there, but we were all working there. All our friends were there.
Yeah.
We were all together like Brown's cows, and you'd only one.
<It's important.
laughs> It was like as I was saying, Paddy, when he was in the mill, and he was one of the machine men, I think. And there was a Mr. Yoon. He was a big man in it.
And a big boss.
Yeah, a big boss. And remember, Pat was going to go to America, and my mother and father nearly had a fit, like he was leaving a good pensionable job to just when they eventually found out he was singing. And I remember he wanted to go, and he didn't want to go. He had one very good friend that he did shift work, And Jim Gray was his name. He was very good to Pat. And he used to fill in for him while he'd be singing in the embankment. So then Pat began to get a little bit sure of what he was doing. He liked it. And he Liberty said he was Hall. Going to grow, Liberty Hall and what have you. And, but anyway, he was going to America. He didn't know what to do. He got the chance. I forget who offered him, but he got the chance to go to America. I remember he talked to this man, Mr. Ewan, which was very, very, very austere. Yeah. And he just said, telling him, Mr. Ewan, he said, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what to do. He said, whether to go or not. And leave my good pensionable job, maybe it all fall flat. And he said, you know something? He said, Pat, take it. He said, if I was young and had a different chance, and now he would have been the big man there, he said, you go. And he said, take your chances. He said, you're very young. So he came home and he said, Mr. Ewan said I should go as well. But all they were doing rosaries and everything at home because he wouldn't have a job and he was an American. They didn't know what was going to happen. And like that, he just made it, and that was it. Yeah.
And I heard that you used to actually say the rosary in the mill.
Oh, yes. And Linda collected. Linda, my sister Linda, and Paddy O'Toole, the two of them collected money, and they had the statue. And Paddy O'Toole, which only lived down, down the road.
Yeah, at the end of the mill road.
And he was gifted. He used to
great accordion
player. Oh, he was gifted, and he was a very smart man. My sister Linda always said, you know, if he had got education, he would have been brilliant. But he was an artist, and he did this beautiful painting on a piece of paper in the mill and put it behind. It was absolutely gorgeous.
That was for Marion Year, the statue was bought, and everybody paid a little contribution to buy the whole lot.
Yeah.
And
of course, 1954, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. Marion Year. Yeah. And
were you all very poised?
We had to be.
I'm telling you, Jean's father, Jack, was very good-living man, and he loved the rosary. And when we worked in the lower mill with Jack, every evening, I wasn't in the mill for 1954. I didn't join till 1956. But the rosary had started in 54 and it was still going on. So when we'd be going home in the evening, Jack would say, we have to say the rosary now, and the beads are coming. Get me beads, and
rosary beads.
And he'd take out the beads and he'd start the rosary.
Where? On the road?
No, on the floor of the factory where we were working.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just beside the machines. We'd all kneel down and say the rosary. And he'd be giving it out like, you know, like the priest. And there were some evenings that I'd be going to play camogie. Some of the other girls would be going somewhere to a dancer. We'd have something else on. And we'd be planning all the evening. How are we going to get out? This old fecker now, we'll start the rosary, and how are we going to get out? And we'd run like hares the minute the horn blew for to go home. And he'd come out to the steps after. You might get to the end of the lawn walk for not saying the rosary.
But that was bad. I came home after being caught with the rosary in the finishing house.
Yeah.
And the rosary would have to be said after the tea. Because dinner, you see, was always 1 o'clock. Mm. And women at that time kept the dinners, where we differ now. But 1 o'clock, I'd come home then at five and have our dinner, and our tea rather, and sit down then and get down, we have to say the rosary. And we'd be trying to get to the pictures or a dance or whatever. And you'd kneel down and we'd say like Betty and Kit here with bars, and we wouldn't have rosary. So you'd keep putting out your fingers and going like this for the 10 Hail Marys. And we'd get lost in the middle of it. And Pat had burst out laughing. And he said, this is terrible. Start again. Well, he'd pray then for everyone that was sick. And I know there was a cardinal in Mincent, he was locked up.
In jail
in Russia somewhere. Mm. I was at the Arden Curtain. And I said, I hope to God he'd get out sometime. We were sick praying for him. And that'd be another round of a rosary. And Mammy would say, Jack Shorten for Mincent. But we were held there till all hours.
But it wasn't just the rosary, it was the trimmings.
The
you know, he'd go on with the trimmings. The trimmings could go on for 15 minutes after the rosary.
I don't know if we ever played.
There was a prayer between each decade, and you know, and he was a very devout man now.
Yeah.
But he never swore, but he used to say, "Yes, walk it down that booking lawn." Everything was booked. Book this and book that and book that. You walk it down that lawn some of these days when you walk it down on your knees and pray to God.
And it's different occasions, and I go to the States with Pat, and I said, "There's not a fucking place to heat here," but and I say, "What did she say?" Someone would say, "She doesn't curse, she just says something to her daddy." But the Americans, thought I was.
Yeah,
definitely, and it's the weather. You know, you just say it and come out. So you have to remember when you went on Cape Cod, you gave your mouth shut.
We all said it, like, you know, that was Jack Riley saying.
Yeah,
Jack Riley would say, "Would you ever book off?"
Yes.
And then we had Maggie Proctor would say, "Keep saying nothing." We could give you. Pieces that they said from now to Tibbs Eve, and you'd laugh at all of them. You know the way they say comedians have one-liners?
Yeah.
Well, we had a whole mill full of comedians, and everybody in it had a one-line, and they used it all the time, so that all the rest of us tuned into their one-liners.
Where did Daddy get that word from?
Well, he didn't want to say the bad word. And you're saying it in America.
My husband used to say to me, "Gee, don't say that, I think you're cursing."
and tell me, I know the men had nicknames, you know. Did the women have, did ye have nicknames?
Well, we were just Fear and Jean. Yeah. I don't think we had anybody with nicknames. The older crowd, I think, just had.
We used to call one another by our surnames.
Yeah.
I was always Ricer.
Arroyo.
And Rio for
Rio,
you.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was just the way we were, you know. And it'd be the same in the Camogie field. Come on, Rice, you tick!
Rio. Well, I wasn't a Camogie woman.
I played Camogie with Betty, you see. Yeah. And you know, she was finished before when I was only starting.
Now, Gerard, my son, the youngsters of his age group had funny name, Barrow. And there was different names on the youngster that would relate to our father, growing in our father's time. But we didn't, no. We were awfully polite.
We were awfully polite to one another.
Well, at times. At times. Listen, I could stay talking. It's a brilliant...
Yes, it's lovely to meet you.
It is. And Vera, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me. And Jean, it was lovely to meet you too.
Thank you. Jean and I was guided of us our age, so I'll put it down.
Well, you'll have to put on your age, yeah. So listen, thanks again. Thanks.